through which activities are carried on. Actually, in the mid 20th century, there was one scientist, his name was Penfield. He's a Nobel Prize winner. And he wanted to find out the identity of a person. And the scientists were of the opinion that the self is the brain. The self is the brain. That means, because of complex reactions that is going on within the brain, consciousness develops. When the nervous system is evolved to a certain extent, a person becomes conscious of his existence. So it is basically the brain which gives the person a sense of identity. That is what they felt, because the brain is the main part of the nervous system. So the brain gives the person a sense of identity. That is what they felt. So this Mr. Penfield, a very well-known scientist, what he did was, he used electronic gadgets to try to get... He connected electronic transmitters to different parts of the brain. And he identified which part of the brain is connected to which part of the body. So what it would do is, a certain part of the brain corresponds to a certain limb of the body, say the arm. So it's to give electrical signal to that part of the brain. And when he used to give that signal to that part of the brain, electrical shock to that part of the brain, the patient's arm would lift up. So then he would ask the person, "So what happened?" And the person would say that my arm got lifted. "But did you tell the arm to get to lift?" "No." Then Mr. Penfield used to ask the patient, "Now move the arm in a different direction." And the person would move the arm in a different direction, and then he would ask the patient, "What happened?" The patient would say that, "I wanted my arm to move, and so I moved the arm." So if you understand this experiment more closely, in the first instance, a signal was sent to the brain, and the arm moved, but the person refused that I made the conscious choice to move the arm. That means the decision maker is different from the instrument, that is the brain. The brain actually sends the signals for different limbs of the body to act differently. But who gives the indication to the brain to send those signals, that person is unknown to modern science. But according to the Vedic understanding, we understand that the soul gives the information to the brain that you should lift the hand, and then the brain operates the hand. So in the first case, without the person giving the indication, Penfield directly indicated the brain to lift the arm by giving an electrical signal. So Penfield, he left his body in 1976. Towards the end, he made a conclusion that actually the brain is like a computer. And just like a computer needs to be operated on by someone, so there is someone who is operating the brain. But the brain itself is not the self. He himself concluded that. He was a Nobel Prize winner. Just before he died, a few days before he died, he made this, gave this understanding. So actually, the living entity is different from the body. And the soul, because of having desires, so many desires in this material world, the Lord, through material nature, has provided the body to the soul. But how is it that we don't make out this reality very clearly. Most of the time, we actually feel that we are the body. And we don't get the understanding that actually the body is separate from me. A person who is driving a car, say, you ask him, are you the car? He'll say no. He knows he's different from the car. So similarly, we should be able to understand that my body is different from me. I am different from the body. Why is it that we can't differentiate it? It is because of the intense absorption. Because we identify with the body so much, and we are so much connected with the desires of the body, that we don't understand the difference between the body and the self. There is a story of three men who had a plan of spending their vacation in a hotel room on the 100th floor. So these three men, on the weekend, they came to that hotel, and to their disappointment, suddenly they realized that the room is on the 100th floor, but the lift is not operating. So the three of them had to walk up the stairs. Now 100 floors to walk up is very difficult. So what to do now? It's a miserable experience. So they decided amongst themselves that as they are walking up the 100 floors, they will discuss how to spend the weekend. What they are going to do up there for the coming 2 or 3 days, 2.5 days. What they are going to do up there. So each of them was putting forth an idea. We'll do this, this, this. Another person will do this, this, this. And so in this way they were going on thinking, planning. And they were so excited, just wondering and just planning how they are going to spend the weekend. And they were very absorbed in that plan making that they forgot that they were climbing up 100 floors. So in this way they reached the 100 floors very comfortably, simply discussing how to spend the weekend. But to their dismay, suddenly they realized that they had forgotten to get the key to the room on the 100th floor. So now they have to walk down again and climb up the stairs again. So this is the story of most people in this world. In the sense that these people, it was a miserable experience for them to walk up 100 floors. Similarly in this world, to live in this world is a miserable experience actually. When we get up in the morning, there is something or the other to worry about. Every day morning, there is something to worry about. There is something to complain about. And there is at least one misery in life that is bothering us. If we introspect every day morning, and generally that is the first thought that comes to our mind when we get up. The misery that is on top. We are reminded of that as soon as we get up in the morning. So there is no person in this world who doesn't have at least one misery that is bothering him. And that is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that this material world is Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. Dukkhalayam means a place where there is bound to be misery. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan Ki Jai. A place where something or the other is always bothering us. At least there is some problem in our life. Some discomfort. It is always there. There is no exception to this rule. But we find in the world that everyone is busy doing something or the other in spite of this world being a miserable place. What keeps people moving? Now, what kept these three people going up, even though it was a miserable experience to walk up 100 floors? They were absorbed in thoughts of how they are going to enjoy in the future, in the 3 days to come, how they are going to enjoy. That was their absorption. And being absorbed in the thoughts of future enjoyment, they forgot the miseries they were currently undergoing. Similarly, the world we are living in, people, they are so much caught up and so much absorbed in planning for future enjoyment that they forget that right now they are in a pool of miseries. It's a fact. And why is there is absorption? The absorption is there because there is hope. So any person in this world, he has hope that even though I am a failure right now, I have hope that I'll be happy in the future. I'm having this and this plans. I have made these plans to become happy and to enjoy. And once these plans are fulfilled, I'm going to enjoy life. And that hope keeps him going even though he's in misery. A student, for example. Being a student is not a very pleasurable experience. A student has to really work hard. Sometimes during examinations, he has to sacrifice his sleep. It's not a pleasant experience. Nobody likes exams. But what keeps him going? The hope. An expectation. Hopes and expectations. Sometimes immediate hopes and expectations, and sometimes distant hopes and expectations. What is the student's immediate hope and expectation? He imagines himself being the topper in his class and being appreciated by friends, relatives and parents. So that thought gives him the inspiration to continue and undergo that present misery. And the distant hopes and expectations are that he's going to earn money, he's going to make a big career. And these hopes and expectations keep him going and helps him forget the current miseries of life. So in this world, people, how they are able to continue on and on in life? This is the reason. Absorption. Absorption in future hopes and expectation. So actually speaking, in this world, if you ask someone, are you happy? If they say yes, it should be taken as he has the hope of becoming happy in the future. Because the person, any person in general, he tends to equate his expected happiness as current happiness. That is a general tendency. But if you specify, right now are you happy? It will be no. The answer will be no. That is always a story of the material world. Any person, anywhere in this world, at any given point of time, if the question is asked, are you happy now? It will be no. But the beauty of the way the world is designed by the Supreme Lord is, if you ask that person the question, will you be happy in the future? The answer will always be yes. Even though currently I am not happy, I will be happy in the future. This is the story of every person at all times, throughout his life. And so the world is running. If the second answer were no, the world would come to a grinding halt. Because all you have is present misery. It's only the future hope and expectation that keeps a person going in life. And the more the hope and expectation, the more the absorption in his endeavor. And the more the absorption in the current endeavor, the more the person forgets his current miseries. So we find that generally the people who become depressed are people who have lost hope and expectation. And once you have lost future hopes and expectations of becoming happy, what is left is present misery only. And when you are only left with the present misery, you don't know what to do with life anymore. So you become depressed. But the material world is such a place that the expectations and hopes are never satisfied. But it keeps on going. And the credit goes to modern society that there are newer and newer formulas that are invented to create newer and newer hopes and expectations that keeps people work harder and harder. What is the advertisement industry? Each billboard gives you newer hopes and expectations of happiness. And the more the billboards in the city, the more people will be absorbed in their hard work. And the more they will forget their current miseries. So even though the world is a miserable place, we see in modern times that people are working harder with greater absorption, because the advertisement industry is creating greater hopes and expectation for the people also. And we see the entertainment industry that also runs on the same phenomena. Any movie, if you watch a movie, when the movie becomes thrilling and exciting, when the person who is watching the movie is actively participating in the movie in the sense of he has something to look forward to when he's watching the movie, when he can expect that the person is going to act in this way. He actively plays a part in the movie in terms of thinking of what is going to happen next. So when that happens, the movie becomes really absorbing, because the person is busy in his mind thinking about what will happen next. And when the audience is busy thinking what will happen next, when the absorption is great, the enjoyment is also more on the material platform. So this is the principle of material life. Absorption in future hopes and expectations, and that future hopes and expectation keeps a person moving on, and that those hopes and expectations and that absorption in those hopes and expectations covers the present miseries. So one might ask, one might wonder that, well, this is a good way of leading one's life. Throughout your life, you're always absorbed in future hopes and expectations of happiness, and that also gives you a sense of happiness. That, okay, I'm going to become happy in the future. Right now I'm miserable, but in the future I'm going to become happy anyways. Well, that's a good way of life, one might feel. Even though there is so much of misery around, still there is some feeling of happiness in the mind, because there is some hope, there is some expectation. But what is the use of this false hope and expectation? Just like the story we are narrating, once the three people reach the 100th floor, they realize that they didn't have the key for the room. So all their dreams was a waste of time. So similarly, a materialistic person, he goes on working harder and harder throughout his life, absorbed in his work, always motivated by something he thinks will come in the future, that is happiness. He's filled with hopes of future happiness. He's full of expectations of future happiness. In this way, he leads his whole life, and at the end, what does he gain? Death. That's all. There is no happiness. The happiness was only in the mind. The happiness was only in the dream. That's all. Was that a good life? No. So that is why the Bhagavad Gita and the scriptures wakes up a person to reality. Give up your false hopes and expectations. Understand that you are in a miserable situation. And that is the situation, that is the circumstances in which the Bhagavad Gita was spoken also. Of course, Arjuna is a pure devotee, but still he was put into a role of a materialistic person so that the Gita could be spoken. So when Arjuna was about to fight, he was filled with hopes and expectations of becoming happy in the future. But then suddenly, a few thoughts came across his mind through which he could understand that even if I win the kingdom, Kim no rajyena govinda kim bhoger jivite nama. He says that what is the use of the kingdom if I lose my relatives? I got all the money, all the wealth, but I don't have relatives to enjoy with. Then what is the use of all that money? So all of a sudden, all his hopes and expectations for his future happiness was finished. And once that was finished, all that he was left was with the current miseries. And what was the current misery in front of Arjuna? To fight with his relatives. He was face to face with his current misery. And when that happened, he went into depression. And then the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And the Bhagavad Gita was spoken to give Arjuna the right understanding of how to become happy in life. Life should not be simply about false hopes and expectations. And what is the right way of becoming happy and to be truly successful? That knowledge was given to Arjuna later on. So we are speaking about this movie. Suppose a person is watching, sitting in a movie and watching what is going on, and what makes the movie absorbing is that he's having certain expectations of what is going to happen next. So he's absorbed in that way. That what is going to happen next, what to expect next, all these things are going on in his mind. And his fun is immediately curtailed when someone else who is sitting next to him, who has already seen the movie, prompts to him what is going to happen next, before it actually happens on the screen. So the person next to him, who has already watched the movie, starts telling what is going to happen next in the movie. The person loses all fun in watching the movie anymore. Because there is no more excitement now. Because he already knows what is going to happen next. So the fun is lost. So similarly, the great devotees of the Lord and Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, what they do is tell the conditioned souls that there is no happiness in this material world. And the contribution of the great acharyas, the great spiritual leaders like Srila Prabhupada, was that in their books they made it very clear and they cut down all the hopes of any conditioned soul. Any hopes or any expectations of becoming happy in this world, that is cut down by Srila Prabhupada in his books. So people become very fearful when they come across a spiritual movement, a genuine spiritual movement, because of fear. Because the only thing that keeps them going in this world is future hopes and expectations. And the first thing that happens once they come on the spiritual path is those hopes and expectations are broken down. And that is a very fearful situation, because they are face to face with their current miseries. At least the future hopes of becoming happy was something that kept them going. Now that is not there anymore. Now what is left with them is current miseries. So it's a very fearful situation for people in general. So people are generally fearful of coming close to spiritualists. Because spiritualists, they seem to be pessimistic. Because they tell the reality that there is no use hoping for becoming happy in this material world. But there is a positive side to the story also, in the sense that where to find actual happiness is also given in the scriptures. It's also given, it's also provided by the great souls. Now, as I was telling, people in this world, throughout their life, they're chasing after happiness and they're hoping that they'll catch up happiness, they'll catch happiness in the very near future. And they don't find happiness till the end of life. And the only thing they find at the end of life is death. So a devotee, he compares happiness to a butterfly. If you try to catch a butterfly, what will happen is the butterfly will fly away from us. The more you chase after the butterfly, the more the butterfly will run away. And we can never be successful. That is something like a person chasing after happiness also. Happiness, you feel that you're about to catch happiness, but you fail. But then you feel that, okay, the butterfly has gone from this place to that place, now I'll go and catch the butterfly there definitely. But again you fail there also. So happiness is like butterfly. Now, another thing you can do is, just turn your attention in a different direction, and the butterfly will automatically come and land on our shoulders. If we don't chase after the butterfly and we turn our attention elsewhere, the butterfly will automatically come and land on our shoulders. So people who search after happiness in this material world always fail. So what is the way of becoming happy? The way of becoming happy is trying to make others happy. When you try to make others happy, we automatically become happy ourselves. But how to make others happy is a very deep subject matter, which is rooted in spirituality. Yata taror mula nishechanena trapyanti tatskanda bujopashaka pranopahara chayatindriyana. That the Srimad Bhagavatam says that if you want to water the different parts of the tree, you have to water the root of the tree. If you want to nourish the different limbs of the body, you have to feed food to the stomach. Similarly, if we want to make others happy, we have to make the root of everybody happy. That is, every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And we can nourish everybody and try to serve everybody by serving the root of all existence, that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the science of actually becoming happy in this world. We can actually become happy by not by chasing after happiness ourselves, but trying to make others happy. And how we can make others happy? By nourishing the root of the entire creation. We cannot make each person happy individually. That is very difficult. The world is such a place that if we try to make someone happy, someone else will be displeased. So the only way by which we can make everyone happy is by making happy the Supreme Lord. Because He is the root of all creation. Once He is happy, everyone is happy. Automatically becomes happy. So when we serve Him, everyone automatically becomes served. So this is the message of the Bhagavad Gita. So a materialistic person, he forgets the present miseries of life because of being absorbed in future hopes and expectations of becoming happy. That is how he forgets present miseries. Similarly, a spiritualist, how he forgets the present miseries? By becoming absorbed in trying to make others happy. Absorption is always required. If the absorption is gone in something, then you are miserable. Whether you are a spiritualist or a materialist. Because absorption is the only way in which a person can survive in this material world. The world is such a place that a person will be finished if he is not absorbed in something. Someone has to be absorbed in something. He has to be absorbed in some hopes and some expectations. It is mandatory. A materialistic person is absorbed in hopes and expectations of himself becoming happy. But the spiritualist is absorbed in hopes and expectations of making others happy. In hopes and expectations of making Krishna happy. So what is the difference between the two paths? A materialist, he is absorbed in hopes of becoming happy in the future. He is absorbed in expectations of becoming happy in the future. But at every stage, he faces frustration. But as soon as he faces frustration, he somehow finds a different hope of becoming happy. So at every step, he faces frustration. But he always has future expectations. And that future expectation keeps him going. So he keeps on going with expectations even though he faces frustration at every step. That is material life. But a person on the path of spirituality, he is also absorbed. He is also absorbed in future hopes and expectations of making others happy, by making the Supreme Lord happy. But the difference is, a spiritualist at every step, he actually tastes, if not the entirety, but at least he gets a glimpse of unlimited happiness. So at every step, he's experiencing some happiness. And that happiness is increasing. And in the end, he experiences unlimited happiness. Anandam buddhi vardhanam pratipadam purnam vrata svadhanam. Happiness that is ever increasing and never ending. That is what he gains in the end. But even on the path, he gains happiness. He actually experiences happiness on the way, and the happiness is ever increasing with each experience. And when he actually gains happiness, his hopes and expectations to gain more happiness increases of the spiritualist. And more the hopes of and more the hopes and expectations increase, the more his absorption increases. So a spiritualist who is practicing actual spiritual life, according to the rules and regulations given in the Bhagavad Gita, that is, he is trying to become happy by giving happiness to others, by giving pleasure to the Supreme Lord. If that is his formula for happiness, he will find that as he is going ahead with his life, he will experience more and more happiness as time progresses. And more the happiness he experiences, the more his hopes and expectations also increases of gaining more happiness. And the more his hopes and expectation increases, the more his absorption increases in his devotional service. And in the end, that culminates in samadhi, total absorption. And in culmination, he experiences unlimited happiness. But the story of a materialistic person is, he is absorbed too, in hopes and expectations of future happiness. But at every stage, he is facing misery. But then again he feels that, okay, this time I was miserable, this time I was unsuccessful, but next time I'll be successful. And that future hope and expectation keeps him going, even though he's facing failure at every step. And in the end, what does he get? Death. So the Bhagavad Gita helps us from the state of absorption in materialistic life to the state of absorption in spiritual life. And many a times, a person in between is actually miserable. A person who is absorbed in material life, he is getting a feeling of happiness, dreaming about the future. And the person who is absorbed in spiritual life, he is experiencing some kind of happiness because of his activities of trying to give pleasure to Krishna. But the person in between, he has neither absorption in material life nor in spiritual life. And when he is in between, all he is with is the present miseries of life. And when he is face to face with the miseries of life, he becomes miserable. So many times, spiritual practitioners, they go through this phase of spirituality too. This interim state of absorption from materialistic life to spiritual life. It's like a tunnel. If the tunnel winds, the tunnel is not straight, it is winding. Then when you are in the middle of the tunnel, you look ahead, it is darkness. You look behind, it is darkness. So sometimes that happens. But there is nothing to fear. Because the proper formula, it is a stage which Arjuna also faced. As soon as Arjuna lost absorption in material life, he became immediately miserable. But then he attentively heard the Bhagavad Gita, and when he understood how to become absorbed in spiritual activity of fighting, he became happy again. So that period of interim misery is required. A person has to realize that I am in a miserable situation in this material world. So one has to be shaken from the dream of material life. People are absorbed in the dream of future happiness in this world. You ask any person, how are you? He'll say, I'm fine, I'm happy. But the reality is not happy. He feels that he will become happy. Right now he's always in misery. It's a fact. Because material world is a miserable place anyways. So he has to be shaken from the dream that you won't become happy. As long as you continue in material life, you cannot become happy. You have to turn to spiritual life for happiness. Understand, you're in a miserable situation. Let the reality dawn upon you that this material world is a miserable place. That is not pessimism. That is giving understanding of reality. So once a person realizes that he is miserable, then he can actually inquire, what is the true path of becoming happy? What is the true path of catching the butterfly? Look in another direction. Stop your materialistic pursuits and try to make others happy. And how to make others happy? By first learning to make how to please the Supreme Lord Himself. And once we embark on this journey of trying to please the Supreme Lord Krishna, and also by connecting other people to Krishna, that is how we can make other people also happy, by connecting them to Krishna. And when we embark on that journey, we'll start experiencing actual happiness. And the more we experience actual happiness, the more our enthusiasm to serve will increase. And the more the enthusiasm to serve increases, the more the absorption increases. Until it reaches the climax of samadhi. So, that is what Krishna is trying to tell in this particular verse, that the soul is different from the body. That as long as the soul is absorbed in the body, and as long as the soul is absorbed in trying to make the body happy, there will always be frustration in this life. So first the understanding is, we are not the body, and nothing connected with the body can make us happy. So we have to get out of that absorption in body, and the absorption of trying to make the body happy. Thank you very much. Any questions anyone has? I didn't get your question. Now in India, people when they are young, they have got some expectations and hopes that they will become happy in the future. The question he asked was that some people are actually happy, you said? They think they are happy. They are happy now. Some people actually think that they are happy because their senses are gratified. That is his point. So in India, youngsters, because India is a relatively poor country, it's becoming richer now. But still, it's not considered to be a rich country now. So youngsters, they have got some expectation for the future. And that is what keeps them going. In India especially. That the thought of earning money, the dream of earning a lot of money, a dream of making a career, and the dream of getting married, that is also on top of their heads. So all these dreams of becoming happy keeps them moving, and they look forward towards life. But in the West we can see that more and more youngsters are facing mind related disorders. It's a trend, the statistics speak that the depression, teenage depression rate is increasing. And Deyamrat Swami was telling that at least 50% of university students in America have at least one serious mental disorder. 50% have at least one serious mental disorder. And the suicide rate is increasing. Now why is that so? That is because a teenager in America is already experienced what a youngster in India is dreaming about. So he has experienced it all now. And he doesn't know what to expect next anymore. Now what to do now? Whatever has to be experienced, he has already got it. But he is not fully satisfied. That is why he goes into depression. You have nothing to look forward to. You have nothing to hope for. What to hope for now? Whatever can be hoped for, you already got it. You have experienced it. There is nothing more to hope for in life. Your life is finished. So let's commit suicide. So the statistics itself speaks the reality. That why these trends are seen in the Western countries. Because the only thing that keeps a materialistic person keep going is hopes and expectations. And those hopes and expectations are finished. Why? Because the person has already experienced the so-called pleasures of life. Now he doesn't know what else to hope for. He doesn't know how to get more happiness. So he starts facing mental troubles. So people in India, the youngsters, they don't get mentally disturbed. Or they don't get into depression also so much. Why? Because they hope that they will become happy in the future. By earning a lot of money. Or becoming successful in their careers. Or by getting married. By experiencing sex pleasure, they feel they will become happy. So that hope keeps them going. So this trend of growing mental disorders in the West, that itself proves the point that actually there is no happiness in the current status. What keeps a person going is hopes of future happiness. Now if people are actually happy, then why such alarming statistics in the West? Why are people going into depression? A society where depression rate is increasing. A society where suicide rate is increasing. A society where mental disorders are increasing. Can you call it a happy society? Even though all their senses are gratified, still why all these things are happening? It shows that they are not happy. थैंक यू वेरी मच. श्रीमद् भगवद गीता की जय. श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय.